Welcome to Talking in Stations, a podcast about EVE Online. I am Matterall, and today we have a very special show for you with CCP devs that work on new player experience. And we also have a few people that have been on here before from EVE University and from Rendition Road. So anyway, I'll get that right in just a second. Also, we have Elise Randolph who's hanging out with me. How you doing, Elise?
Well, pretty good, pretty good. How you doing? It's Redemption Road, by the way. It's a little squirrel going to outer space.
I got it. Okay. Redemption. I should know that. Redemption Road.
Yes. You should know that.
Yeah. You should know. We don't do this with a teleprompter like Fancy Brisk does, who I totally envy his teleprompter or notes. So we just go. And all the stuff has to be like unjumbled in the announcer's brain as we go. So here we are. Let's make some introductions and then let's get to some news. Then we're going to talk about the new players of EVE Online. And then we're going to make a very special announcement at the very end of this show that we have been saving. And I'll tell you more about that in a few minutes. Okay, first I would like to introduce CCP Cake Machine.
Hey guys, happy to be here.
And Cake Machine, here are my notes. Cake Machine is a game designer and he works on, is it fair to say that it's new player experience?
Yes, currently I would. I think it would be safe to box it down to maybe the first hour of gameplay.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, we'll talk about maybe how that's changed. I would also like to introduce CCP Waterboy.
Hey guys, it's Wonderboy, and I'm so happy to be here as well. I'm a software engineer.
That's what I said.
By the way.
That's what
yeah,
I said.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, that's what it's I said. You movie, just heard so it wrong. And he is a software game designer for CCP. And last but not least, the most difficult name to pronounce, and I'm going to get it right, is CCP Priobrzenski.
And she is having problems with her push-to-talk. Give her a moment.
Okay, we will come right back. I had a picture for her. Well, let's say hi to also a couple people that are friends of the show and around quite a bit. Gray Gale, how are you doing?
I'm doing great and surprisingly wide awake at this early time. And kind of laughing at you being able to pronounce, I'm not even going to try, CCP Prio. I'm just going to put that, but messed up Redemption.
Yeah, I screwed up some easy ones because I've been practicing the hard ones. And I also would like to introduce an old friend of the show, Seamus Donahue from EVE University. How are you doing, Seamus?
Seamus Donahue. Still alive, still breathing. That's a good thing.
Okay. Well, I had practice for this episode. I still got 3 out of 6 wrong. I will work on my pronunciations.
Hey, that's only half bad.
Before we start, we need to tick off some of the stuff that's been going on in EVE Online because there certainly is a lot of stuff always going on, and Elise is going to help us with that. What's going on, Elise?
A few things are going on. Still some reverberations from Snuff disbanding. Those groups are kind of splitting up. Some of them are, you know, they're going all over the place. Some of them are going to Volta, as we reported last week. Some are going to Trigger Happy, the guys that are out in Tribute. And, you know, they're all kind of splitting up. It's quite wild. Pandemic Legion moved. We don't know where those crazy guys moved to, but I'm sure you can keep a lookout for them soon because they just did a little bit of a deployment. I believe Black Legion did too, but maybe I missed that one. Snigwafa joined Pandemic Horde, which is a pretty big movement for two very old corps.
Snigwafa is from where?
They were formerly in Pandemic Legion, and before that, they've always been kind of their own entity in Waffles. They just, if you guys ever remember any of the Alliance Tournament videos of Do You Like Waffles? That's them, the Waffle guy. They used to live in LoSec, then they flirted around in Wormholes for a bit during Blackout. And it looks like they're joining Horde, and I'm not sure where they're going to go in Horde. We'll see how that plays out.
What was Waffles named after? Why Waffles? It didn't make any sense to me.
They were for a long time, they were the feeder corp for the Pandemic Legion Executor Corp Sniggardly, and they went with Snigwafa, kind of like the Luftwaffe, and then they just stuck with Waffles because it was easier.
Okay.
And so that happened. Also, there was this huge war that broke down in Heck, which is actually a really fun story. We talked about it a little bit last week. There's this group called Hog Hitmen, which I've been referring to incorrectly as Hogs Hitmen, just because it's funnier in my head. But Hog Hitman, during the Halloween loot drop event where everything, all player recs dropped 100% of the loot, they're like, you know what? We're going to just war deck everyone that comes through our home system. So they war decked 180 corpse and alliances. They bit off a little bit more than they could chew, though, because they those 180 corpse and alliances all banded together and reinforced their war deck Fortizar. Because to declare war, you have to, you know, have a structure associated with it. So they used a Fortizar, and then all those 180 groups went and reinforced that Fortizar. It got to the final timer on Saturday, and Heck Local went up to about 500, 550, where it usually sits about 100, 200. And just all these various groups that had declared war on them, on the Hog Hitman Alliance, were fighting them. And then Hog and Pirate came out together, and about 95 billion ISK in carnage happened over this high sec Fortizar, all over some dumb war that nobody really cared about because of a Halloween loot event. I have a feeling whoever made that event could not in their wildest dreams believe that that would happen. But it was a massive, massive fight, probably one of the largest in high sec's history, I think, ever since, at least since the Becca, which was about a year ago. So shout out to all the people involved there, Pirate, Hog, Hitman. Black Legion was there. Vindictive played a huge role, and Intergalactic Space Hobos, one of my favorite alliance names ever. Those guys, and obviously all our friends.
That's awesome. Unintended consequence from 100% loot drop. Okay, we actually have CCP Brzezinski. How are you doing? Can you say hi?
I'm gonna try. Can you hear me?
You did it.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you. I'm good.
Thank you. It's always difficult to get people up and running the first time they appear on the show, but we're very happy to have you guys here and all on video, which is really good because normally we just get voices, but it's nice to see you all.
Yeah, we are the prettiest team, so.
You absolutely are. Like I said, you remind me of my family. Okay. Actually, let's talk about EVE for new players and what their experience is like and some of the stuff they look for. And then we'll talk about how CCP is meeting some interesting goals and how they're improving the experience for players that come into the game for the first time. So, Grey Gal and Seamus, like, what do you guys run into when you are dealing with new players? Since that's something you do often.
All ladies first.
Oh, the whole bigger is better thing just drives me up the wall. So, what's the best ship in EVE? You know, what's the biggest ship in EVE? You know, and how do I climb the ladders, the levels to get to the top tier ships? They just want to jump right into the, you know, the battleship. And even when you explain to them the whole concept that in EVE, there is no one perfect ship, that there's a ship and it's fitting for what you are doing, you know, for that particular role and job and circumstance. They still want to go for the they don't believe you, you know, they still want to go for the battleship or the capital right off the bat. And they'll spend money on Plex to get the skill points so that way they can fly a battleship. And like, you still haven't figured out the difference between shield tanking and armor tanking. And yeah, that's so probably the number one.
They're coming in looking for the bigger equipment, not understanding like some of the foundational stuff they should probably work out first.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's probably the number one question I get. Number one, like, debate and explanation that I make. I should pre-record it for like, pre-roam.
You get it that much, huh?
Oh yeah. All the time.
Yeah. It's funny. A friend of mine came into the game right after me and he's like, hey, I'm not opposed to spending money to buy the biggest gun I can buy.
Exactly.
Just tell me which one it is and I'll buy it. And, I thought, well, I think there's probably other things that we need to do first. But how do you come in contact with, Grey Gal, how do you come in contact with new players and why do you know this?
Well, primarily through my years of running new player realms, public realms that are open to new players where, and well, pretty much anybody, but specifically new players, we put him into a frigate or a destroyer, take him out on Rome after doing a brief introduction. By we, I mean Redemption Road, Affirmative Alliance, the Redemption Road NPSI community, which I've been running for 6 years.
NPSI is
not purple shoot it.
Not purple shoot it. See, and that means that when you're in the same fleet with somebody, their color turns purple. And so you don't shoot anybody in your own fleet. But that also means you shoot everybody outside of your fleet. So it's a public fleet,
yep.
Which means you can shoot anybody except your fleet mates.
Yes, exactly. Because purple is sacrosanct. And we do these public realms regularly, but specifically we do a new player oriented realm once a month. And on this realm, we spend about 20 minutes or so going over the bare minimum essentials of flying in a fleet, what the fleet window is, how to hold on gate, how to hold cloak when you come through a gate, that kind of thing. And then take them on in a nullsec and get them exploded and their hands shaking and heart racing and just, oh yeah.
See if that sticks.
They get all adorable too. You know, they're all in pods and they're like, oh my God, that was so cool. Can we do it again? I just love it. Yeah.
Just keep in mind that the diplomats of your regular, usual corporation or alliance that you're a member of might get a little bit cross at you if they hear you've been shooting blues. Just as a note.
Yeah, and most NPSI communities, especially ours, we tell people that if we're shooting a blue, you know, a personal or corporate alliance blue of yours, that it's perfectly fine to sit out the fight or to just not shoot at that target and shoot at a target that's not blue, or just remember it's always easier to ask forgiveness than permission.
Yeah. So Seamus, you work with EVE University, which is an organization that really specializes in really giving knowledge to players as they're coming into the game. What kinds of things have you seen?
Higher raison d'être.
That's French. Right?
I think it is. I may have butchered the word raison.
It's okay. Nobody will hold that against you. But what are some of the things that you see with new players?
So just to give you some context, under normal circumstances, my usual activities with EVE University are either producing instructional YouTube videos or and running a weekly or multiple times weekly class called the Game Mechanics Question and Answer Session.
Right.
So the general premise is, over the past 7 days, you have encountered things in EVE Online that have confused you to no end, and now you have questions about how the game works. So in that context, my most regular contact with the students is in the Q&A sessions, and usually the questions they're bringing to me are questions about various gameplay mechanics, like how do turrets work, and then we go into I go into a discussion of optimal fall off tracking speed, signature radius, and so on, or how do missiles work, or what are stacking penalties and things like that.
Yeah, you clear up any question, and I've seen you do this because I've attended your classes many times. Any question at all, and you answer the mechanics, how it works, and with a thoroughness that is almost like written form. So you're able to take them from nuts to soup, or from the beginning to the very end of a certain mechanic so they can understand it. And you hold the class until all the questions are exhausted, which I think was fascinating. And how often does that class happen, and how do people get involved in it? How can they attend?
Under normal circumstances, I teach that class two or three times a week. I'm currently on hiatus because I've been dealing with some real life upsets recently, mm-hmm. Which I don't want to get into on a podcast, but yeah, dealing with real life, not fun. Take my word. But under normal circumstances, I run that class two or three times a week. And for any of our classes, we typically conduct the classes on our public Mumble server. So if you download the Mumble voice client, and you set up a server for voice.evuniversity.org, and the port is 64739. By default, most Mumble servers use a port of 64738, but in our case, 64738, the default port is for a standard Mumble. So you'd have to create, an EVE University forum account first. And even then, you won't be able to get access to certain channels unless you're actually a member of the corporation. But our classes are on port 64739, and that's open to the public.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, go ahead. Cool.
Was that all? Do you want to say something else?
Just that there's also an in-game chat channel, class space, open parentheses, Eve space, university, close parentheses.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thanks. Okay, let's actually move the conversation over to the new player experience as it was titled before. I don't know if the title has changed, but we have CCP with us here, and we're really excited to ask them some questions about what kind of work they've been doing and what kind of results they've been getting, if they can share some of that with us. So hi again to CCP Brzezinski. CCP, did I say Brzezinski?
Prio Brzezinski. You can call me CCPP if it's too hard.
Yes, CCP Prio Brzezinski. yeah, CCP Wonder Boy and CCP Cake Machine.
Thank you.
So the first thing I want to ask is, how much effort is going into the new players these days?
Well, currently we have two teams that are one team dedicated to the first 1 hour, 1 to 3 hours, and another team dedicated to like the first 30 hours. But that team is like 50%, maybe 60% dedicated to it. So we have like 1.5 teams doing it out of all of each one.
I also want to chime in that even though the focus of these teams is, you know, set into this time box, maybe first so-and-so time, when we do encounter usability problems with EVE Online, we also try to address those in a bigger sense. So a lot of our responsibility is also just on the experience, not specifically for new players, if that makes sense.
Yeah, because that's what I was going to ask. Is there a difference between a new player and a returning player that hasn't played in like 8 years?
No, there's really no fundamental difference there. They've become new players again. I mean, it depends on their level of experience. But if they've only just completed the tutorial a few years back and then, you know, didn't play and then started again, we just regard them as a new player again, really.
I haven't played this game since 2005. How the hell do I undock?
Yeah, it's a big, this game is totally different than when I started the game, and I started in 2008. But somebody said, like, what's your definition of a new player? Is it a time period, or is it an exposure amount? Or what do you guys think new players are? Or if we should even think of the concept of a new player?
It's pretty kind of going to the philosophical point of what is a new player. I mean, I am of the opinion that you're a new player from the moment you log on for the first time and to the moment you open your last window in EVE for the first time, you know? So go on.
The way I like to also look at it is, so a new player to EVE Online, obviously, if I'm launching the client for the first time, I know nothing, or we assume that, you know, said player knows nothing. But then that player might go just directly into factional warfare and become very competent in factional warfare, and then get the question, what's this invention thing? Maybe I'll go for that. Or, you know, what's this industry? And then, you know, that player effectively becomes a new player again, because that system is totally different to that factional warfare system, for instance. So,
and then we have a statistical definition of what is a new player. And Priya Brzezinski probably knows the definition of that better.
Yeah, that is one of the most common questions I get from our own company. People come and ask me, so what is a new player to us? And it always leads to a longer discussion about the specific feature they're talking about, because what is a new player is very different compared to, it depends a lot on what we are looking at. If we're looking only at the NPE, then we're maybe just interested in people who play the NPE. Then it doesn't matter too much if they're playing through it on their first try, or if they have take a break and log in later and try again. Whereas if we're looking now, we're running some initiative on daily login incentives for new players. In that sense, we might consider players to be new for 30 days, because we're developing a feature that's supposed to handle this. We don't have a definition of what exactly a new player is.
Yeah, it was. There are a few people in chat, and this is something I hear from EVE Online players all the time, is I've played this game for 3 or 4 years now. I'm still a new player in like half of the game, because I don't get Like it's just something I've never had to do. Like if you ask one of the more seasoned players, hey, what's your PI setup? He'll be like, what's a PI? I don't know. So it's pretty interesting. And I think it's really great. One of the things that you guys touched on is, you know, you are the new player team, but you also, if you see other issues, you address it. And I think this was like a big talking point from the CSM minutes, because there was like this little text bite that people took out and just focused on, where it was CCP is focusing like 80% of their time on the new player experience and 20% of the time on existing players. And people got riled up after reading that, but obviously it was taken out of context. And I think CCP Burger or CCP Rise, one of the two at eVegas, said something like, hey, just to clarify, like the best new player retention tool we have in EVE Online is currently the existing player base. So obviously we're not ignoring you. We're just giving you more tools and stuff like that. So that's a good point that you guys bring up and kind of hammer home as well.
So I would like to just emphasize on the experience part of the thing. So I think it would be safe to say that a lot of focus for CCP now is on the experience of the game. For me, that's just about time. You know what I mean? So just focus on quality of life for the product in general.
From a like, how to fly in space and just the essential basic mechanics of the game, I generally define new players as under 3 months in game, but I'm nearly 11 years in game and I'm still learning something new almost every time I undock. It's you never stop learning. We are all noobs over just repeatedly throughout our EVE careers.
So what I'm getting is that new player is a term they throw out for people who are just starting the game that haven't made it a habit yet. But in reality, the work that's being done is much more than just to attract new players to stick around. It's actually to make gameplay more intuitive in all forms, because everybody's a new player to different gameplay they've never played before.
Yes, we want to essentially make the game such that it'll teach you to play itself, really. It'll be that intuitive that you can just gather what you're supposed to do next, how to use a certain feature, really.
Yeah, so how has that changed over the years? Is it different? Is what you're doing different than what was considered the new player experience 5-10 years ago? The work that was being done on it, is it different?
I believe so, because just a moment ago we were touching on how difficult it is to actually teach a new player the basics. Because what are the basics? It depends totally on what you want to do. So what do you want to teach a new player? The first tutorial taught something. The next tutorial, a new team came in and be like, oh, this is wrong. We want to teach you it's a player this set of skills and this set of maneuvers. And then the next tutorial came in like, oh, we want to improve the numbers. So we've got a new team looking at it. See, and then they say, all right, we want to teach these things instead. And I mean, it's not like they were all wrong. I think they were all right in their own sense. But it's very, very hard to make a tutorial that teaches all of these things. What we're doing right now is taking the existing tutorial and not revamping it totally. We want to keep the things that it's teaching you. It's just basic maneuverability, basic locking on, like basic combat, really. That's basically what it's teaching you, just combat and skills and looting and stuff like that. And we'll just make that experience really, really smooth. We want to remove all the jagged edges from that tutorial and just try and, lubricate that tutorial as much as we can. And then maybe we can change some more things. We have some, maybe we are, go on, what's up?
I want to jump in on that and also say, so I think that's the big difference in our approach now than previously, is instead of making something new, starting from scratch, we're just taking what we have and we're making sure that we can identify certain pain points for new players and we can figure out how to address those and do that quickly. Because the thing is, when we started looking at new players, genuine new players, people who had never seen EVE before, sit down and play through the tutorial, it was really painful to see how hard it was for them to perform the most basic of actions in EVE. It could be really hard just to lock a target or use the overview. And we saw tremendous pain points, and we started comparing those to the data. Where are people dropping off during the tutorial? There was a match. So here we have a bad user experience, and it's resulting in such and such percent of people to stop in the process during that time. So we just make sure that the experience is a bit more smooth, that it's a bit more intuitive to perform said action. That helps people learn it quicker, and it also makes them feel better about the experience, so they go on for a little longer. And the fact is that we know that in those early minutes, we're losing potential Eve fans. People haven't gotten to the point yet where they can see what Eve has to offer and make the decision if this is a game for them or not. So we know we're losing people before that point, which is super bad. But we've also seen that improving these small things, making these small quality of life improvements to the experience, that the numbers actually increase substantially. So without doing anything new.
That's a tall order for you guys to go through. I know I only have a little bit of anecdotal evidence for this, but whenever I get like a new friend to play the game, they more often than not get stuck, and I'm like, well, just right click and you can find everything you need. And that concept of just like right click and have all these little branching out windows is just completely foreign to a lot of people who like aren't used to playing like a game like this. And also the other problem, which I don't know how you guys are going to tackle, but I don't envy you guys trying to tackle, is Eve is so open-ended. One of the questions I always get, and I'm sure Seamus and Greg, I'll get this all the time. It's what do I do now? And you can say, well, you can do anything. Like, it's an open sandbox. And like, okay, yeah, but what specifically does that mean? It's so hard to get that knowledge and impart it onto a newer player.
Yeah, it's more like answering the question, what makes sense to do next? It doesn't really make sense for you to go straight to NullSec and try to rat, because you can't. But, you know, maybe we can have some suggestions after the tutorial, what you're supposed to do, like what makes sense.
Yeah,
we've
identified that point specifically, and we call it kind of the cliff. So after the on-rails experience, which is basically from tutorial to career agent, there's a cliff. And we've kind of come to the conclusion that this is the what now, what next cliff. And people have a real problem answering that question because there's so little direction.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times I've seen players get lost between the career agents and getting to the Sisters of Eve epic arc, because it kind of leads them to do that next. And then they're woefully unprepared for it oftentimes, but they can't even figure out how to find the system. You know?
That's also one of the things we keep in mind when we're looking at how the changes we are making to the tutorial are improving the completion rates of the different operation and of the overall tutorial. It doesn't help to have an extremely good completion rate of the overall tutorial if people then just stop playing afterwards. We need to also have people go somewhere and start engaging with the game and at least maybe not know what to do, but at least know where to go.
How do the three of you work together? Because we have data analytics, we have software engineer, and we have game designer. So is it a cycle that you work together? How does that work?
We just sit together and we have meetings, and we call game designers, come up with a plan, and we, our software engineers, we execute that plan, and the data analysts, they analyze the effects.
And then out from the analysis, the game designer can then work on pinpointing some of the biggest pain points we have, and then it starts again.
Yeah, it sounds like a cycle.
Yeah.
It totally is.
Totally.
Just kind of like out there a little bit, but any chance you could make the local chat a completely separate window by default for new players? Because trying to talk to new players to reach them, like when you're hanging out in a new player system, trying to tell them about like my new bro Rome or answer questions and stuff.
We're not an advocacy here. I thought you were going to say,
sorry.
Can you take that local and turn it off?
No. As a separate window, because they just see yet another flashing light and they have no idea that there's people there trying to help them.
Yeah, so this is actually an interesting point you've raised, because in local chat is one of the systems which new players interact with. It's there from the very beginning, and it has hit our radar. This is a feature which could do with a quality of life improvement, just to help people more easily engage with it. So this is something that would be a prime candidate for a usability improvement. So we might end up improving local chat as a new player experience focus, if that makes sense, but it should benefit everyone.
So this is one of the maybe the pain points that you would identify and then do some work on.
Yes, I would.
One of the biggest pain points that I've seen addressed ever in the new player experience through the history of the game is with the community fittings. That idea is so phenomenal, because just the simple notion of like, hey, here's how you should fit a ship. You can fit it just like this. This is like a benchmark to go from, instead of open up Excel and start putting in numbers, like see what fits. And it's one of those things where like these fits exist out in the ether, just from player groups and stuff like that. But if you're a new player, you don't know to look for those things, and that's when you need it the most. So I think that whoever came up with that idea, that's aces. That's an amazing thing. Everyone I've talked to that has started to use it is like, oh, this makes way more sense. And a lot of people that had been playing the game, they're kind of moaning, because everyone has that first experience in Eve. It's what I call the shared misery, where you like fit your ship completely wrong and that makes no sense, and it explodes and you get laughed at. So now this new generation, they won't get laughed at as much.
It's AKA me like 10 years ago.
The ubiquitous dual tanked and mixed guns fit.
And it has to be cap stable too.
Ah, yes, that too.
Oh, by the way, the overview is probably another possible pain point for new players, especially since that's one of the first things they need to get used to in the first few minutes. Just want to slide that in there edgewise.
Yeah, we're aware. For sure. Yeah.
One of the things we recently identified was when we were doing a user test with new players, is the concept of the overview makes so much sense for everyone at CCP and every EVE player. But when we were talking about the overview to new players, they would look around in space. Yeah. So where in this overview is the thing? Because the overview list or the overview window at the right-hand side is not intuitively the overview for people.
Yeah, people treat it as a scanner, really, which it is, kind of.
Yeah, it's so painful to watch a person trying to lock a ship in space while they're orbiting at 500, turning the camera, furiously trying to get, no, wait, I didn't hit it, oh my. Super painful to watch.
So do you guys get, when you're like implementing new features or testing out new features, do you guys have like a group of like just completely new people to the game that you guys just like watch and like track their eye movement and see what they're doing?
Yeah, they abduct people off of Logavager for that.
Yeah. So totally, we have a user testing dungeon where we keep a lot of people. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to get more into a cadence of actually testing the product with new people, just to get that experience and see that experience, because it's super valuable to the whole process.
Yeah, we got shown a really, really good user testing dungeon from another company, and we were just really envious of them.
Did you think we need to improve our dungeon? We need better chains?
Yeah, we already have a dungeon. They had a meeting room that was just changed into a user testing dungeon for a little while, and we get substandard results from substandard dungeons, so need to do better here.
So you guys identify pain points and you try to file those down so they don't affect people and snag people and frustrate them, because that's the kind of thing that would lead to them leaving the game. Is it hard to identify what a pain point is that can be overcome? Because that seems like it would be rewarding for someone to run into resistance and then be able to overcome it. And that may lead to more loyalty towards the product. Like, is it difficult to distinguish the difference?
Difficult to distinguish the difference. I think we see the difference quite clearly later when it comes to career agents. So when it comes to career agents, we see, for instance, for the exploration career agent, before they're scanning and after they're scanning for the first time, we see about 25% drop in players. So one in every four does not go past this hurdle. For the people who do, most of them finish to the end, right? So it's a question. If we teach players how to properly scan or give them tools that make scanning a more intuitive or easier process for them to get their heads on, does that make more subpar e-players? I don't know. But we do know that the players who do go through these experiences, they do end up going further than those who quit, for sure.
But in our first passes of the tutorial, the pain points were really, really obvious. We used some intuition here, where it was like, okay, if we change nothing, we just go through the tutorial without rearranging anything, then players, they just don't see the button or something is overlapping. That's just kind of a stupid thing that we just fixed. And we saw really, really good results just from that.
Well, it seems like the goal is to, first of all, get them through the first few minutes of the game, and then the first few hours of the game, and then to see them come back and play a first few days and weeks of the game. It's almost like the longer you can keep them in the game, the more likely they are to find what really keeps them in the game long term.
Yeah, so the way I see it is we're trying to keep them in the game for long enough for them to be able to answer the question, is EVE Online a game experience that I'm up for playing or not? Because we see that we're losing people before that point. And there's also a survey we did, I can't remember, as a few months ago, where the results were that people play EVE a few times before they end up actually playing it. So they try it and they leave and they try it and leave. And then maybe on a third or fourth time, that's when they get the picture. Ah, okay, wow, now I love this game, right? So we're just trying to make sure that that's a shorter gap and get more people to that point.
And if we look at the tutorial and we look at the operations people have to go through, we do see the biggest drop-off in the very first operations where people are quickly seeing, okay, is what I'm seeing now, is this aligned with what I was expecting when I got into the game? So that's where we see the biggest drop-off. But when we have people who have made it to the later operations, who have spent time doing all of these things, and we can see that there's a certain place where there's still quite a bit, not as big a drop-off, but still a big drop-off, then we can see that, okay, these are some of the pain points that we need to solve because we have now had these people move all this way. Let's not lose them now over something stupid.
And that's why you call it fixing the stupid or something?
Yeah.
Stop the
bleeding.
I think
that has been used.
Yeah, fixing
it. Yeah.
Back when I first attended the EVE Online Fan Fest, somebody that I met there once told me that he had tried EVE Online, gave up on it, tried it again, gave up on it, tried it again, gave up on it 7 times. And then he had seen my YouTube videos, and then he finally stuck with it.
Yeah, this is exactly what we've been seeing. And we just want to make sure that we're not losing these kind of EVE fans early because of bad UX or information that's impossible to get. That's quite common in EVE. So it's quite common that we push players, both new players and old players, to the internet to solve their problems in EVE. Whereas EVE should at least attempt to try to help you understand those problems by yourself, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then,
sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, and then you get this another problem, which I'm not sure how you guys address or can even address. Like EVE is considered like a hardcore game in like the gaming circles, and all like people who like would be attracted to a hardcore game, they're also the type of people that would just like click out of tutorials when the game starts, like, I don't need this, screw this, I'm a gamer, man, I know how to work this thing. Like, what do you do to those people who just like completely try and skip the tutorial and just get totally lost?
We want to trick them. You want to make them go through the tutorial without telling them that it's a tutorial.
Those are the ones they drag into the dungeon.
Yeah. From a game design perspective, and this actually goes back to an earlier question Matterall was asking about overcoming a difficulty. The difficulty that the player is overcoming has to make sense, and it has to be something that you actually designed for and planned the game mechanics around, rather than the difficulty being, I wrestled with the interface.
Yeah, we want to have EVE be hard, not unnecessarily hard. We want it to be cruel, but fair. And when you fail, you want it to be your fault, not the UI's fault.
Yeah, right, exactly. I think it's a very good point that, you know, the challenge should come from gameplay, not from finding out where interface options are or where buttons are or how to perform very basic actions, because we're losing people during those steps, not because the challenge is difficult. The challenge is actually really simple in the beginning, but just figuring out how to do basic things, that's the big problem.
I heard Orca say something during the CCP minute, the CSM minutes, where she said, players don't file bug reports. And I thought that was, new players don't file bug reports, they just leave. I think that's what you're up against, right? People run into something, they think it's the fault of the game. The game, therefore, is a bad game, and they take off.
That's really why we need user testing. Like, we need new players.
And it's also, these are people who don't have a voice even. We don't hear what they have to say. Not like if you leave Eve during the first 5 minutes of gameplay, we don't hear from you. But we see you in the data, and we see you during playtests. It's a worthy cause, in my opinion, for sure.
Yeah. So you've been doing this work. I think it's a new way of approaching it, if I'm not mistaken. I wonder what your results have been compared to the past. Like, are you seeing improvements?
We are definitely seeing improvements compared to when we first launched the new player experience. And every time we make changes and release the changes to it, we do see improvements. It's in very, very small steps, but hopefully in the end it will build up and lead to a lot more players making it through and sticking into the game. But it's of course not just a question of having a good tutorial. It is also everything around it that needs to help.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. So currently we're focused on the tutorial and have been focusing on the tutorial. And then I mean us three. Our focus has started to shift both before the tutorial and after the tutorial. The end goal is to create a holistic experience. So we can bring players on a journey at the end of which they should have a good idea about what EVE Online is, and also to try and be honest to what EVE Online is. So try to focus things like the overview early, because if you don't like interacting with that UI element specifically in order to do things, then EVE Online is not a game for you. But if you learn how to use the overview successfully and well early, that's going to make your whole life as a player much more easier.
But all of this also starts even before players even make it into the game. It starts with our acquisition. When we do our marketing, we try to get new players in. We should try to have their expectations aligned with the game they're actually going to play. Then we need to get them into the game, where we have also done some improvements to the download and demand and the launcher that doesn't crash at weird times as it could do a lot earlier. And then we need to get them to sign in. Need them to verify emails, we need them to create the character, and then they're in the NP. So there's a lot of steps even before we reach the NPE, where we're also working on improvements.
Yeah, and that brings up a couple of questions. A very interesting part of the expectations game, what players are coming to EVE Online, and if they're leaving, is it natural they would leave because they were the wrong players to begin with? Like, you don't want players that are looking for a very simplistic game to come to EVE Online. It's very complex. Even using the game is complex, much less the themes that you're going to get into are very complex. So is the marketing, is it hard to align that to what the game actually is, since EVE is a very difficult game to define?
It is. We had some people, and this is anecdotal, to just think that EVE is a TIE Fighter simulator game. And once they get in, they're just supremely disappointed. They don't. It's not what I thought it was. I can't really say about the marketing challenges, but I assume it's pretty hard.
Just something that just came to mind a moment ago. Before players even get to the new player experience, they first have to create a character, and the character creation process itself can get complicated. Especially if you don't have an opportunity to be able to change it for free at least once later on. It might be worth considering.
We make it seem like much like more of a big deal than it actually is.
You have to make a lot of choices that you have no idea what will affect. And most of them don't really affect a lot.
or anything.
And the choices you do make may not affect very much at all. For instance, I think we just talked to somebody who their wife played, spent 4 hours creating the face and the name, and once perfected the character, got into the game and realized that that's all she gets for that is the little postage stamp size profile picture she gets. And she was like, I did a lot of work for that. Where'd it go?
Yeah. Yeah. It's actually, we've been in the near future, we're going to be given control over the character creator. So we might actually be able to change some things here. But that's future work. And see what happens.
Yeah.
I remember agonizing over which like race and corp and like bloodline I was going to choose. I was like, oh man, what if I choose the wrong one? I'm going to be like some shitty traitor for the rest of my life. This is the worst. And then I find out that it doesn't matter. I'm like, oh, that's great.
I kid you not, for my first like 5 days in game, I refused. I didn't leave Galente space because I thought I would get killed if I went into one of the other spaces. And people, you know, kept saying, just go to Jita and buy it. And I'm like, but I can't. That's the Keldari. I don't want to die. You know.
I picked the sensitive artistic diplomat. I think it's Intaki Galente. And I was like, yeah, that's what I'll do. I'll do that because that's kind of my style. And then I realized I couldn't be a sensitive diplomat, artistic, anything. Like, it just didn't matter. But I guess that's just maybe the, I don't know how far those problems are from what you guys are doing. You guys are dealing with right now is just cleaning up all the little sticking points that people fall out of the game. And I don't know if I got the answer to this. This might have been the second question, Priya Brzezinski, that we were talking about. The changes have produced good results. You're keeping people in longer.
Yes, we are. Especially if you're looking at like the early day retention, people looking in, you know, the next day or the next day after that. We're not yet having enough there to see a trickle down effect to like 30 day or 90 day or 180 day retention, because then there's so much other things that affect it. Plus, there will always be a natural drop off after. After this amount of time. So we will need to get even more people in through to see it start later.
But you are seeing the bulge of the group kind of move through the time further along. Like you're pushing
not in,
people
in for... huge numbers. I'm not going to sit here and oversell it. But we are seeing positive improvements. Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen some of the graphs, at least at eVegas, they showed some of the graphs. But the other thing I wanted to say, because I talked to somebody who said that you could kind of predict how big the population could grow with some of the, I don't know, you have a tool that now lets you predict the flywheel effect. If you were to save 5 people here, that you might actually see a 10-person increase later on. I thought that was kind of interesting. So do you have predictive tools that way, or do you not concern yourself with the future? You just kind of work on the problem.
We do try to figure out how many we need to grow, because that is the ultimate goal. We need to grow our player base. That's the only way Eve can be sustainable. I'm actually not really sure what you're referring to. That's not a tool I made.
Okay. I can't say who told me that, but somebody said they heard something like that.
Okay.
But you know, this brings up a different question. This is the other way I wanted to go with the conversation. And that was, what are the players? Are they different players now than they were 10 years ago? Are you getting a different quality of player? Is the marketing bringing in different types of players? Are the people coming into the game just have different expectations of video games these days? Or I mean, are you seeing kind of same player?
Tough question to answer, obviously, because I don't think there's any real way of knowing what kind of people are getting into the game now and what kind of people got into the game 10 years ago. But from my own experience, me as a gamer, I've become spoiled through the years by different games with polished experiences. And I've come to expect such polish to the gaming experiences that I pick up today. And I get a good reminder of this whenever I go back to play some game I used to play maybe 10 or 20 years ago. And it's just so hard to deal with the bad UI and these kind of things. So I think players are becoming spoiled by better game mechanics and better gaming experiences. So we need to be aware of that and modernize, really.
I would also hypothesize that just the fact there are more games available free to play just makes the sort of initial attention span a new player has for a game much shorter than it used to be, where you would actually, okay, I'm going to get a trial. I'm actually going to go out and buy this game that I heard was really good. Whereas like you can just, if you're on Steam, you can go and then you can start a game and then, oh no, not really. I'm going to try this one instead.
Plus, I think people point back to 2013, 2011 through 2013 is a really high point for EVE Online. What people may not realize is that was a high point for MMORPGs in general. That was when they were at their most adopted, I think. And what's happened since then, I think you've seen competition not only from the mobile, a more mobile gaming platform, like a phone or you know, a social platform that meets the same needs that an MMORPG might meet, but you've also seen open world games, first person stuff like Skyrim and The Witcher, and just stuff that feels so big that you can get lost in it, and that takes part of the audience that might have gone to an MMO as well. So the options in what MMOs were special for, those seem to be really, really competitive these days.
And EVE also has to fight for an aging, not, don't want to say aging player, but like as gamers get older, they have less free time, right? And EVE Online, we all know that the median age of the player is on the older side compared to other games. Like they're not all high school and college students that have quite a bit of free time. They're entering the workforce, stuff like that. So you have to compete not only to keep them in the game, but against other games as well. So that's got to be quite a stiff challenge.
I often say it's not a game, it's a lifestyle choice.
Well, yeah, here we are on the weekend. We're missing some of the fun things that we do talking about the game. But this is very interesting, I think, because so much effort is going into bringing in new players. I wonder if there's like, you know, we're going to have Korean localization, which means the game will be able to be read and written in Korean. If some of the new players that need to be captured are actually from the Asian market, I'm talking about China, I'm talking about Korea, and that whole time zone. Is there any thought to that, or does that not enter the new player development picture?
It's all the same, really. No, an Asian new player or a Western new player, they're the same. Make the experience smooth for all. Should be fine.
We also already have lots of players on EVE Online from East Asia.
Yeah, already.
So we're just hoping to expand on that market that is really big and where we do see a great potential for growth.
Yeah. So there's no design considerations, something they might be more familiar with or anything like that?
No, the clients are exactly the same except for the text.
Right. So if you were aliens abducting humans, you would not make any adjustments. They're all just humans to you. See? Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Let's talk about challenges of rewarding players and how to, and this may not be the perfect question for you guys, but I wonder if you had any thoughts on it. One of the things that players need is incentives to do the next thing. And I wonder, like with players who've been around for so long, if it's difficult to incentivize them, considering that they have to compete with players who've been here for 10 years or 15 years. Does any thought go into that?
So obviously there are multiple economies in EVE Online. So new players are able to find themselves within, actually, in my opinion, pretty streamlined economy with Tech 1 modules and Tech 1 hulls. And they can do with those level 1 and 2 security missions. They can do combat sites in high sec. They can have a lot of fun. They can do a fair amount of industry and production. But they live obviously in an economy that's way below a lot of other players. They can still engage with the market, and they can still engage with other players in that economy. And then they can upgrade to the next economy and have to figure out how to do that. And I would imagine that every step of the way, there's something interesting to do and money coming in and money coming out, obviously. But the fact that you can't get to the end game maybe is is a problem, or the path to the end game is very unclear for new players.
I like that idea. There's different, there's kind of like different currencies. So your access to them is different. It seems like a lot of work's being done on NPE stuff. Like, well, that's new player experience. I meant NPC stuff, new player characters or non-player characters. Is that something that you guys inform, like maybe the other teams that are working on it? You know, that funnel to get people into missions, to get them past tutorial missions, into normal missions, into abyssal missions. Is that any part of your design considerations?
Sorry, which NPC changes are you talking about specifically?
Well, like you have the abyssal space that's kind of, you know, non-player.
I think it means a PvE. PvE, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I meant. A PvE. Right.
No, that's not something we're taking into consideration right now. But that's obviously what we've been working on in the past few months is just the tutorial. The NPE obviously reaches further than that. But right now we haven't made any changes to existing gameplay features.
But later we hope to have the opportunity to address what abyssal new players have to deal with, what, you know, side running or mission running new players have to deal with, if that makes sense. So to make sure that there is a bridge from where you are to a certain aspect of the game, and that bridge should at least try to help you get into it on your own and then figure things out.
Yeah, if you had like a magic wand and you could force players to like avoid certain areas of the game or focus more on certain areas of the game, is there like something that you would kind of push people towards and or like steer people away from? Like, do you think people that get into, let's say, running like level one, level two missions, do you think they just have a worse time at playing Eve compared to those who like jump into faction warfare or do exploration, something like that?
Well, this reminded me of a study that was done by CCP Ghost a while back. And he interestingly told us that missions are the most played feature of the game, but the most disliked. So I would love to steer players away from missions, away from incursions, into more the combat sites and the escalations, and into abyssal dead space, you know, into wormholes, really. That's just my personal opinion.
Yeah, I approach this completely differently. I just think of these different pockets of gameplay on Eve, and there's a lot of them, as something that a person might potentially find themselves in and enjoy really much, and just to help them get there and help them see that it's available to them, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Personally, my favorite gameplay activities are mission running and incursion running. Yeah, oh, and also, they do have a magic wand for that. They do have a magic wand. It's known as developer time. It's a very difficult wand to wave, apparently.
It's a political wand, really.
It takes a long time for the spell to work, like years. But yep. Okay, so there is some. So it sounds like there are considerations, but also. And what I say about considerations of the funnel is like where you take to give a new player meaning or a mission, how you take them through a funnel of different gameplay. But it also sounds like really you're just trying to fix areas of the game that people might be interested in because people have different interests. I've heard this described as not one game, but like 36 games in one. And so different people will play the game the way they want to play it and find nothing wrong with the way they're playing the game. And then other people will say like, well, this is the game over here. And it's just no agreement on what the actual game is.
Now, one thing I want to introduce players to much earlier than we're doing right now is PvP. So let new players get the PvP experience just as a part of the tutorial or the new player kind of journey, the first journey that the, you know, because for a lot of people, that's where the big emotion comes from in EVE Online, the adrenaline and the rush of being in combat with another player. So, and also in a broader sense, trying to bring players more together earlier. For instance, we were doing playtests and a lot of participants would kind of ask the question, am I in multiplayer yet? Or is this still a single player experience? And local is filled with 30 people, right? But, yeah. You know, They just don't know. They don't know that they're in space with a lot of other people and that everything's a living, breathing universe. So we need to bring that more to the front and bring people together earlier.
I love the idea of in the new player experience, just throwing two players who don't know each other into like a little dome and say, you can't leave until one kills the other. And just that'll just become a new part of the tutorial. That'll be great.
Yeah, totally. Ship it.
Yeah. I've seen it.
When I was a new player back in 2009, I had just finished the Sisters of Eve epic arc, and I was in Arnon. I decided to insure my Tech 1 cruiser, my Vexer, and take it into Adarain, see if I could make more money by killing belt rats there. I got blown up. Got my pod out, though. I insured my Catalyst Destroyer, went back into Adarain to try and find the frigate that blew me up. I got blown up by somebody else. Got my pod out, and then I decided, you know, okay, this is not sustainable. I think I'm going to stay in high security. And I've been a high security care bearer ever since.
Well, one of the things that Hilmar said during the Ask Me Anything that happened at EVE Vegas was that one of the most aspirational things to do, besides to climb into a bigger and bigger ship, is mining. Like, that's mining an asteroid is very aspirational for new players, even though older players think that's how you graze, but I guess I don't have a question about it. It's more of a point of different people approach this game totally differently. And the rush to get them into PvP, for instance, is something that I think is undeniably strong, but it's not for everybody. But what is really interesting about PvP, and I think, Greg, you said it best when you said the marketing could change to not you against the universe, but finish my thought.
the whole, so much of EVE marketing is about you against the universe, but really it needs to be you and your friends against them and their friends.
Because when I talk to like some of the players that are really hooked on PvP, they seem to say, like, in the early days when they first started playing this game, it felt like this was Counter-Strike, but like times 10. And so you would come in, be tactical, and you would defeat another guy who was coming in with his guys and being tactical. And that was like one of the main attractors to like the people who wanted to brawl all the time. So, we'll put a pin in that because I want to come back to it in just a few minutes. This is the last questions that we have for CCP directly, but community fittings, we talked about that a little bit earlier. Give us your thoughts on community fittings and how they help.
I think they're goddamn awesome. I really could have used them when I was a player.
Yeah, I'll say the same. I mean, when I was a new player, I would just always be online or talking to my friends to get some fits, and I would share my fits with them, and they would just, why would you do that? Why would you, no, don't fit like that, fit like this. And I couldn't understand why. And you know, it's just one of those bridges. So it's easier for players to get their heads around what a good fit is. And how it works.
Yeah, and that combined with the fitting warnings, I think it makes this a killer feature together.
Pierre Brzezinski, are you... I just lost my question. That happens occasionally. But because your statistics,
it's
I want to ask you...
About my fitting habits, it's very bad. First time I tried playing EVE, I fitted my ship with a mining tool, and then I just flew out and got shot because I didn't have any weapons. Nothing in the game told me it was probably a good idea.
It's too bad you couldn't somehow use that mining laser as a weapon of some sort. We slice off their wing or something.
No, I want some blood ritter.
I wanted to ask you a statistics question, and right when I was about to, I lost it. But I'll move you to the next question that maybe you can help out with. Shareable bookmarks is another thing that's looks like it's new. And I'm wondering if you guys have thoughts on that, because I think there are certain players are extremely excited about that possibility because they can use it for other means. But how do you guys see that?
I see it just as a natural extension of the existing bookmark system. And if you think about it, they should have been shareable to begin with. It just wasn't really the thought when it was designed to begin with. But I think it's really, really great. I've had some problems with, as a player, going somewhere because the guy was just like, warp to this, and then at like warp to like 75 kilometers here, and then you're at the spot. But if you can just drag a bookmark into the chat, and I can just warp to it, and that sounds really, really great. And I can't wait to see what you players are going to do with it.
Yeah, and well, I think it's an extension of the point I made earlier that we're starting to focus on the experience. So a lot of these kind of little things which we wanted to do for a long time that have to do with the quality of life on Eve, all of a sudden get under our radar and become viable things for us to take a closer look at.
Yeah, some of the things I've been hearing is it'll be really useful for contracts for mercenaries. And I don't think these things can actually, you may have like a new profession that comes up as a broker between these bookmarks because you're going to want to sell them for maybe escalations.
Yeah, like a bookmark broker. Be kind of cool.
New career. New Eve career.
Yeah, exactly. All these, we're also thinking that in terms of, you know, some of the new technology that's being experimented with the animated characters and, you know, just the portrait making, since you only really do it once, unless you go ahead and pay for the opportunity to do it again, it's kind of it doesn't really go anywhere. But now that you're going to have maybe more integrated animation into the game with like between you, your character and an agent character, that it may mean more to actually create a new profession that is a hairdresser or, you know, a makeup artist. And what we're thinking is if you could somehow design something and download it, that if you could then upload it to a different character, you could actually create that profession for people.
Oh, that was like six meta levels above my current thinking.
It's kind of like a clone sculptist, or like sculpting a clone and then selling the DNA to some other players.
Absolutely, clone sculptor. There are people who will take the time to do it as a profession, and there are people that would pay for that opportunity to have that done for them, I think.
But I like it.
Let's put a pin in that one too. Okay. Well, I want to thank you guys. We're about to make another announcement that I think will be something that's very big for Talking in Stations. Is we've done this now for 3 years, and we've done this this thing that seems a little bit separate from the game, and we've tried for a while to figure out how we could do more Talking in Stations, but inside of Eve, because we felt like we're taking people out of Eve Online. We're keeping them interested, whether they're playing or not. And then because of that interest, they get themselves in or out of Eve Online, but we're not really doing anything inside of Eve Online. I never really liked that. So for a while, I toyed with the idea of writing a newsletter / newspaper inside the game that people could subscribe to. But we haven't really gone very far with that. Another idea was actually that Talking in Stations should happen with us in game. So if we're at, you know, Talking in Stations coming to you from Amarian space in Cor Azor at this station, that our characters should actually be in that station and all the guests should actually be in that station too. So people could physically visit us while we do the show in there. But people were like, there's no way I'm taking my character in the high sec to do that show. So that didn't work. So finally we thought, well, some of the stuff that came out in Vegas was the CCP Ghost talked about with new player experience was the retention rates that happen with fleets when somebody gets invited to a fleet. And Greg Eld, you have some experience with that since you worked with Agony in Redemption Road.
Yes, and I had access to 10 years of Agony's data from their PvP University project. Almost 10,000 players went through one of their PvP basic classes, which was a two-day basically weekend thing where the first day you spend about 4 hours going through like a lecture and some practical exercises, and they just dumped so much information on you about e-war and fittings and mechanics, basic mechanics and basic fleet maneuvers and stuff. And then the second day took you out on a row. And over that 10 years, just looking at the 1 to 3 month old players, meaning people who were less than 3 months old, the first time they took that, you know, when they took that class, 82% of them were still playing Eve a year later. All right. And now in Redemption Road, I have 6 years of data, almost just under 6,000 pilots have come through, have been on one of my Nubro rooms. And my Nubro rooms, it's much more compressed. We do about 20, 30 minutes, just get you the basic essentials of flying in fleet, and then take you out on a roam and get you killed. And everybody loves me for it. And we have a little over 70%. You know, again, this is just looking at the people who have been playing. This is their first experience, and they're still within their first 3 months. Just about 70% are just over 70% are still playing a year later. And the most interesting thing about this, because I, you know, dug into it deeper, I looked at the data from older players and players who were new to PvP but have been playing E for several years, and it pretty much held true that they were more likely to continue to be playing 1, 2, 3, 5 years out, much more likely, like a 60% chance. They were much more likely to seek fleets. They were much more likely to join fleets and to become involved in things. I mean, you look at the alumni list of Agony Unleashed, and it's just littered with people who ended up on Alliance tournament teams, who ended up in the CSM, who there's at least, there's several actually that are in TIS that are regulars on this show and other shows. And that it's all about that engagement too, though, and learning how to not look stupid. You know, that's what we were teaching them, is how to be a member of a fleet and don't feel like, you know, you're going to make a mistake, that you're going to look stupid. You know, and that gives them the encouragement to go ahead and take the next step, to explore more, to learn more, to PvP more. And many people don't actually get into PvP, but yet they're still playing the game. You know, yeah. And anyway, I could go on for like hours about this.
But being sought out is important. And also knowing that there is a structure there to support you into a difficult part of the game that's not going to humiliate you is also important. In other words, you can join this this training and we expect you to be bad. So that's already dealt with. I think it's one of the effective things that big groups have when they're social before they come into the game, that they say, we don't care about performance and kill boards, we're just having a good time. And that takes a lot of pressure off people having to perform well, because that seems to be one of the mental blockers to get them to fleet up and to do things. So what we want to do is resurrect something that was done before by Agony Unleashed. They had training classes. They had a bit of a curriculum where you had a basic class that would lead you to Wolfpack class, that would lead you to maybe more advanced topics. And what Talking in Station is going to do for a large part of our focus is going to be in building up a fleet academy. So the temporary name is TIS Fleet Academy. We're going to do it in the game. We're going to set up a curriculum. We have so many new tools, thanks to you guys, on how we can compare a person's skills to the skills they would need to take the class. So as somebody signs up, we'll know if they have everything they need in order to take this class. And a lot of that kind of work can be automated. We have 10 FCs inside of Talking in Stations, right, Elise? You're going to do this, right?
Yeah definitely. It'll be great. I'll get everyone bonded and then we'll all die.
Block level FCs. We have wormhole FCs like Izuki. And so we have the resources as far as personnel. We have the organizational and experience with Greygal, who's now joined Talking in Stations. And of course, we have Seamus as a great resource to help us build up some of the curriculum. And then we have the publicity part of Talking in Stations to make sure that people find out this opportunity exists so they can tell some friends. So the first phase of this is to get people our own like certifications, real world certifications on stuff that they need. And that is all put together by people who experience the game in the form of FCs and all that kind of experience that goes into it. And then the second part of it is to try to link them up with good corporations that'll treat them well. And that will come a bit later, but we're going to do a kind of headhunting for people. So we will introduce good and qualified pilots to groups, but we'll also make sure that the groups that we coordinate with are groups that treat their players very well, so that we can help an overall retention for players in the game. That is the big announcement that we wanted to make today. So
awesome.
I think too, you know, we're two groups of people working at the issue from two different directions. You guys building a better game and us trying to do what CCP can't do, because you can't be biased, and that is to give them something to do when they're in here.
Yeah, that's why we're here. We need to work together.
Really appreciate. And I also want to say just awesome job, guys. We really appreciate your effort, and we also want to make sure that in the future we're able to give you guys more tools to reach out to new players.
Oh, I could give you a like laundry list of ideas.
Yeah, please do.
It's better to have it and be able to
Bring ACL lists to fleets, so that way we can use an ACL list to get people into fleets. That's the only one I'll mention right now. It's my current pet passion.
Guys, go ahead and type that into chat, whatever your ideas are. We'll write them down and submit them. These guys are super busy, but we'll...
Seriously, I'm like so honored to be part of TIS and to be helping and being involved with the, setting up of this new project, the Fleet Academy. And, it's going to be different from what Agony did and different from what I do and different from what Eve University does, but yet similar to all of the above. And
I think it's somewhere in the middle there, right?
Yeah, I think so. You know, not quite so structured, but more structured, but not quite so restrictive. Yeah.
It's definitely going to be interesting to see what you guys do. It always is.
We'll see.
Yeah, we'll see how it works.
We know it's going to be incredibly, incredibly time consuming, but we're dedicated people. So we'll see how it works out. And then, later we'll have you all back on and Priya Brzezinski can come back and tell us like statistically how we did.
Yeah, I'll give you all the credit.
See how much effect this specific podcast had.
It started
I expect rising numbers from tomorrow when I have time.
Maybe you could help us with some goal setting. Yeah.
Yeah, I love goal setting.
Well, thanks for sticking around as long as you did. We know you're busy and we'll let you go. I want to say thanks very much, Priya Brzezinski, Wonder Boy, and Cake Machine. All right, thanks. Thanks a lot. And we got one last segment that we're going to go into, and that is something you may not know for players. Anybody got anything? If not, I got one.
Yeah. You go first.
Okay, you go first.
I'll go first. Okay. This one I'm very excited about because last night I was hanging around in our TIS Discord and Billy stopped by and he said, hey, that freighter that you sold us, that freighter has done some interesting things. And so it was called TIS Special. And what happened is that they needed a keep start to put into perimeter right away. And I happened to have one. And he was on a pro guide was on a show with us. So I sold him my keep star from Onanen. And I put it in a freighter called TIS Special. So it carried that freighter over, and that's what the perimeter Keepstar is now. So it planted one. Then it went back and picked up a second Keepstar that I sold them, and that went down south to catch. And it flew all through high sec and into head GP. So it was a very risky thing to do, carrying a Keepstar. And that planted in a different system. And since then, it has planted a total of 4 keep stars, and it's about to plant its 5th keep star for test. So that little freighter that could has been all over the galaxy putting down keep stars for test, and it's called TIS Special. So look for it and don't kill it now. Who want to write the story first? So, yeah.
That's a tall order, my friend.
you just gave everyone a giant bullseye on this poor little freighter.
It just ended its little career.
So I've got a thing it's not so much a tip, so much as like a neat thing that the Eve community has done. If you caught Johnny Splunk's Vegas presentation, it's online for eVegas. I think it's called Too Many FCs. But basically, he made a Twitch extension that allows a bunch of people to like control an Eve character through Twitch. It's kind of like if you guys remember the phenomenon Twitch Plays Pokemon back a few years ago. It's the same concept, and it's called Twitch Plays Eve, and it's actually a Twitch channel. It's offline right now as they're making a few adjustments to it, but it's going to come back on either later tonight or tomorrow morning. And it actually won a developer contest for Twitch, and it's a finalist. And they're going to be doing the judging of the finalists and choosing an actual winner. I believe tomorrow between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. Pacific time. So you guys can do the math on that one. It's 1 p.m. U.S. time and 1800 just Eve time. There you go. I did the math. I'm super good. Thank you, Florida Public School System. Anyways, it would be cool if you guys showed up. And it's actually, I think it's in chaos mode. So you can just do anything that you want to do with the ship. It does some wacky, goofy things, like flies around, it tries to bump people, it tries to PvP. It's actually won a few PvP fights. I think people were just doing it for fun, like letting them win just to build up the Twitch confidence. But yeah, it, and there are different things to do. So definitely check it out tomorrow. Johnny Splunk and the team did a really good job implementing this tool, and it's super neat. And it'd be great if Eve won something that's not necessarily related to the game.
Awesome. Cool. All right. Again, want to thank CCP for joining us. Really appreciate it. It's very interesting stuff, and it's great to meet you all.
Thank you for having us.
Our pleasure. All right, everybody, thanks for joining us. Stay tuned for, we'll raid somebody if you want to stick around for just a second. But I want to say thanks again to Grey Gal and Seamus as well. And Elise, thanks as always for hanging around.
Fly safe.
See you guys.
Right. See ya.
See you.
Bye. All right, we will see you next time on Talking in Stations.